the first line of what would commonly in most companies probably fall under the umbrella of editing, because it's taking text and doing stuff with it.
Yeah, a lot of people ask me, you know, what does a developer do? Because I say, oh, I'm a developer, has a developer thing. They're like, okay, so do you edit? And I'm like, well, kind of. So my job is basically I assign the freelance for the books, and then we get the freelance in, and I take the first whack at it, really. So, like, if we get in a turnover for, you know, a two-page turnover for a freelancer, and it's got a bit of rules, got a bit of pros in there, I do a wide swath of editing, and generally, like, just look at the ideas themselves and say, you know, if he's like, he's talking about Celtic barbarians in the north, or, you know, they do all this stuff, and of course, okay, that's good, you know, keep all that, blah, blah. And then he's like, they're also from outer space. It's like, well, okay, we cut out that whole paragraph, and then a lot of the job ends up being rewriting, but thankfully, we hire a lot of really talented freelancers and a lot of really talented writers, and it's just going through the ideas and making it clear what exactly is going on.
The developers, in a lot of ways, come from our pool, the pool of our most talented and experienced writers. Pretty much any developer that we have on staff is somebody that I would be 100% comfortable with assigning any work I would assign. So they are, in many cases, when a writer submits something to Paizo Publishing, it goes to a developer. That developer is pretty much another writer who has the opportunity to go through, make adjustments, make sure something's cool, because if somebody has decided that, oh, the greatest idea in this whole adventure would be to reveal that all goblins in Galarian actually come from the moon, well, that probably isn't gonna pass muster with a lot of what we've already said in Paizo's products. Isn't gonna pass muster with just another, you know, person who knows things. And that sort of stuff. So they're really getting in there and making sure it's cool, making sure that it's well written, and making sure that it works within our rule set. That's another part of it, really.
Yeah, a large part of the job is knowing the canon, so having had read a lot of the books and knowing the setting, you know, goblins, we've already established that they're not from the moon. So if somebody says that or says something similar, then I know to write back and say, actually, I want to read this book right here, Goblins of Valerian, or something.
The developers, in a lot of ways, to make a film analogy, are kind of the directors on the project. In a lot of ways, they're the ones who are assigning work, they're the ones who are getting it in, and while they have the vision to have an outline and give that to the freelancer, what they get back, they need to make sure it matches that vision. When they're done with that, though, it typically goes over to the editor. Chris, I'm going to skip you for just a second, because I know you used to talk about fiction.
Okay.
But Judy, as somebody who does a lot of editing on really all of our game material, what's the story there?
So when we get turnovers from the developers, we take a number of passes going through it. The first one is usually just a very general cleanup of, you know, grammar, punctuation. Are these actually sentences in English? Hopefully so, but they certainly are by the time they, you know, get past that, through that pass. But then, you know, as we get further down the line, we can look at more and more fine-grained stuff and more kind of high-level things like, you know, if you're giving dates in this, do they match up with the timeline? If you're saying that it's, you know, the year is 50,000 and it's ancient, we're in ancient Assyrian, something's very wrong there. And then, you know, check for things, so, you know, is this concurrent with our canon? If it's an adventure, does the plot make sense? You know, if you're finding an alligator and it's up in a tree, do you have a very good explanation for how it got there?
Hey guys, could you call that shot?
If it's rules text, are the rules kind of readable as English sentences? Do they, are they clear enough that they're really going to be understandable to other readers? If they resemble other, you know, rules for, you know, you have one kind of spell and it's like the mass version of that spell. Is the language pretty parallel in there? In lot of campaign sending stuff and adventures. Is there, you know, gender balance? Is there, you know, do the ethnic groups or people that you're representing represent the part of the world where this is taking place? Those kind of issues too.
So in addition to game material, though, we're publishing more and more fiction here at Paizo. One of the people that's taken it as a front line on that is our fiction editor, James Sutter. But someone else with a great deal of experience and a number of novels under his belt is Chris Carey, who works a lot, increasingly these days, in our fiction lines. So how's that different from...
Well, let's see. So James Sutter usually takes the first pass on the more fiction. So he's a great, he basically does for the fiction what the developer does. The general idea of a fiction editor is a lot similar, more similar to what a game developer does. So he'll look for continuity things, errors, and things like that. So by the time it comes over to me, he's usually gone through it just like a developer would. And then I go through and do more of a copy edit. He picks very good writers. So we're usually dealing with very professional writers. The turnover's quite clean in most cases. But when you have a novel that's like 100,000 words, speaking from experience, there's a lot of room for errors, discrepancies to creep in throughout the manuscript. Also for repetition of language to creep in. And that's the kind of stuff that I look for when I'm going through the novels. It also creeps up in the web fiction. Some of those are quite long as well, because we do publish them in installments.
As somebody who works on both the novel front and the fiction front and the game front, do you find that editing the two are different today?
Yeah, well, I find that the fiction is a lot cleaner, first of all. but there's a lot of crossover in that we're also looking for campaign setting discrepancies, continuity issues with our established campaign setting, and we're also dealing with game rules, in a sense, in a lot of the fiction as well. If there's a spell that's being used, we most of the time don't name the spell, because that's OGL, open game license material, and the novels don't have an open game license with them, so we have to use a more a different kind of spell, a generic spell. So we have to look out for stuff like that. If something that's OGL creeps in, we have to go through and change it so that it's fair use. So there's a lot of crossover, even with game mechanics and fiction. But it is a different experience. Fiction, you're going to be looking for story, obviously. Point of view is a big thing, even with some professional writers. I don't know if you guys know what point of view is. Basically, when you're writing it in all from somebody, the trend in modern fiction is to write everything from the main character's protagonist's point of view, or whoever is the main character in the scene. So you can't go beyond their thoughts or perceptions. So you can't like end a chapter with that person falling asleep or dying. It has to end right there. You can't continue on because there's no one to carry on the narrative.
Eyes to see through.
Exactly. And the reason that there's that trend in modern fiction is because it really helps the reader identify with the character. If you're hopping or doing hip hopping, as they call it, and you're jumping, you have thoughts from different characters all in the same scene, it's really hard for the reader to identify with the characters. It becomes more an intellectual experience reading it, and you know that emotional impact in it. And so we look for stuff like that. That's a big one. So
as you all have probably noticed, we're not getting into a lot of, like, this is not turning into a lecture one. This is what a split infinitive is, that sort of stuff. I don't think anybody really wanted that before they ever came.
You might be surprised.
Well, it turns out we have a lot of writing resources that we can give out at the end of this as well for folks who are interested in improving their writing, because that's something else that we do a lot of, giving feedback to authors to help them improve their writing. So anybody who's interested in some of those particulars are welcome to come up and talk to us right after this. However, what I do want to call out is some of the things that we do run into most commonly. I don't want to turn this into an English lesson, but as folks who do deal with just thousands of words in a week, for a variety of product lines, we do see certain things again and again. I want to throw out some of kind of our best advice, some of the top tier advice that we have for either you to look for in your own writing or for you to look for just as you read it. You guys have anything off the top of your heads, or you want me to go for it first?
Okay. Make sure that you can say everyone's name on the code, because this is, you know, people want to make a name that looks really unusual and really kind of fantasy, and then suddenly you have three X's in a row, and then some Z's and K's, and that's just cruel to GMs. If you kind of say names out loud and give a friend a name and have them say it out loud, you can also help protect yourself from names that are going to turn out sounding really stupid or suggestive or accidentally. That's a trap to stay away from.
Do we want to delve into that? Do we really want to bring that up?
Sure,
we'll bring that up. A few months ago. Oh, yeah?
Go for it.
Okay. give the people what they want. A few months ago, we realized, somewhat embarrassingly from the message board, that we had put together a name in one of our products. I'm not getting into the specifics of this. I'm not here to do that, never mind. We come up with different cultures, despite in our fantasy campaign setting, but a lot of them are based from real world. And when we have names from those, we tend to like to use the naming conventions from those particular real-world regions. Despite that, our readership is largely English. So when somebody reads a name, they are coming to it with an English point of view, an English pronunciation. So when we publish the name, the intention of the name, the way we intended it to be spoken, was...
Is it Ima Vayana?
Ima Vayana.
Yep.
The way it is spelled is pretty much, I'm a vagina.
Not our intention at all. And listen, Nick, if you're which made it worse. Writing gaming stuff, remember that half the world is women. There are so many things that we get in, especially from newer authors, where there are no women, or they are all either one dead in the backstory, or they are maybe prostitutes or barmaids. And that can be so alienating for a lot of the audience, where there's just no one to identify with in the story. So, think about it. A lot of times you don't even need to specify. If you have a group of guards, there's, often for an adventure, it doesn't matter. Think about when you're, just go back through your writing and kind of do a little mental tally. Does this represent my world? And then, if not, kind of be creative about who you can change around to make it actually represent, the people who live there.
This is something that we've been trying to be much more attentive about, and that Judy has really made um, a t- taken on as a significant portion of her work as she goes through, just going through, it's like Judy will go through a document and keep a tally, and at the end, take it to the developer and be like, all right, you've got 13 men, you've got 4 women, 2 of those women are monsters, 1's a prostitute, and 1's dead. The fuck. And at that point, the developer has really no recourse except to be like, I'm a monster. But that's really led to, because to be perfectly honest, and this is not trying to make an excuse, a lot of our developers are men, a lot of our writers are men, and they're not trying to be sexist, they're not trying to be racist, because it's more than just gender parity, it is also ethnic parity, it is also sexuality. We're not trying to pander to any audience, we're not trying to give anybody special treatment, we just want to give the diversity of the world treatment, whether it be a gay character or somebody from a Middle Eastern culture. Like, this hobby is not, and you can tell from just looking around you in this audience, this hobby is not like 15-year-old white dudes in the basement anymore. This has become a much more diverse and much more mature hobby. As authors and as editors, it's an important part of our job to make sure that that's represented, because that's the reality of the situation. So that high-minded bullshit. what else we got?
I just wanted to add, with the names, like, it's very important to Google them. Because, and we do that all the time, because, if you find out that it's, you know, like the Prime Minister of
Indonesia.
Yeah, exactly. We had someone
try to slip in the names of voice actors from some famous anime series, like for all the names in the whole thing. Oh, really? Yeah. Can you please not get a suit?
Well, that's first of all, to whoever said hey over here, that sounded way more dismissive than I meant it to be. I mean, everything that I just said is actually something that we do take very seriously. I'm just trying to step back down off the podium. But something that we do have to deal with is that we are the company that will get sued if what you thought was clever or what an author thought was like, ha ha ha, they'll never notice this. It's like if I make these all the name of Star Wars characters, like obscure Star Wars characters, and we don't know, and it gets out there, and then Lucasfilm is like, hey, all those names, those are ours. We're pretty much like,
don't bankrupt us, please.
Yeah, it's like it has been nice having gainful employment. We will do otherwise now.
That's one of the biggest, hardest things as a developer times is figuring out what's been done already, and figuring out when a freelancer is trying to pull a fast one, just because they think it's funny or whatever. If Tolkien had named all the hobbits after his favorite, flowers, that wouldn't have been as cool. So it really does help to just be serious about it and be respectful.
I mean, that's one of the big things, is that we take this all very seriously, because this is quite literally our livelihoods. The freelancers that we work with the most are the ones that we also know, who are going to treat us seriously, who are being professionals, who are not like, oh, hey, maybe I can make a few bucks off my hobby. This is not a lark for us. This is what we do day in, day out, usually over the weekends as well. It's a serious business for us, and we expect the folks that we bring in to be a part of this to treat it just as seriously as we do.
Yeah, and when we find issues where an author, like when Judy and I find these things that crop up, we go to the developer and make sure that they convey that to the author,
and if they keep making that offense, then they're probably not going to be writing for us much longer, so.
People make mistakes.
Yeah.
One thing if it's like a one-off kind of accident where like, oh, I just, you know, pulled this name out. But, you know, no problem. But it's a problem when people think that they're, you know, being clever and just keep and don't take feedback really and don't kind of respect that.
So. Certainly have that. So
there's also something else that we just ran into. This is kind of goes off of the is kind of a matter of cultural sensitivity. We just published our advanced race guide. It has a whole bunch of monsters in it and whatnot. And we just had somebody on the message boards come to us and be like, I'm from Turkey. Nearly all of your hobgoblin names are Turkish names. And it's like, what? Because obviously none of us are Turkish and don't have a lot of experience in that country. Just had no idea. So we got in touch with the freelancer and we're like, dude! And then comes back to us and he's like, actually, I picked up all of those names from Classic Monsters Revisited, which we published like 5 years ago. And at that point, it's like, okay, so we go back to that project, and yeah, same names and whatnot. And at that point, it's like, we're not using the freelancer that originally wrote that work, but it's like, oh, so this has been a landmine that has been in our canon for like 5 years now. And our intention is not to be, well, I mean, the fellow on the message board was, you know, obviously a little irate because he's definitely being like, so are you saying Turkish people are hobgoblins? Like, no, that is not what we're saying. But it's the sort of thing where you can kind of never be too careful as on the editing side. But just for a lot of us who are signing this work, that's why it's so important to trust your freelancers and know that they're going to take this seriously and not, you know, put this nice little Easter egg in there that 5 years later is going to have your back against the wall with an entire, like, Eastern European country. So, now that we're all on the do not fly list. What else we got? Anything else?
There's more. More standard lower level things that we look out for. Like one of my pet peeves is just repetition. You know, just repetition of phrases in particular. And it's hard, you know, I find it, as I said, it myself as an author, especially when I'm writing longer work, I find it in my own work, but you just have to look for it, catchphrases. Like I remember one book that we did, I won't name the book, but it was written by a single author, and it just had the phrase "tend to," you know, blah blah blah, tends to, and it was a book about a particular creature, and so everything was tends to, and it appeared, I don't know how many times, 200 times or something like that. So I mean, I had to just find replace and find other ways to rephrase the sentence. So, you know, and one of the reasons the author was doing that is because they're not trying to, because if you nail something down, that can cause trouble later, because then we've committed to this is the only thing that happens, this is the only thing that this kind of creature does. But the author was trying, I think, to do something good, which was to leave it open-ended so that there's plenty of options for this creature. But in the process, just use the same principle.
And one of the best ways I learned to counter or to prevent that is to, and this is just a great editing trick in general, is to have a friend, after you've written something, you know, a page or so, whatever, have a friend of yours or a family member, whatever, read it out loud to you, and then you can see where they trip up, where they slow down at, what isn't clear. You can hear how it's going to read to someone else who hasn't read it before, because when you know, after you're done writing something, you're like, oh man, this is, you know, paper gold right here. But you know, someone else who hasn't read it, they'd be like, I don't know what's going on. And don't even ask for comments. Even you can just listen and you can hear the where you need to maybe clean up and where you're being strong.
You can hear in their voice that 5 minutes later they're still hunting for the verb in that sentence.
Yeah.
There's also not just repetition of the same phrase, but there's what we call word echoes, where you're actually like kind of rhyming the words, and that's something I look out for as well.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. If you're, I come up with a rhyming sentence.
Give me a clever example.
Yeah, but really, we're you know, it's like if you're ending a sentence with, you know, a word that ends with T-I-O-N or something like recognition or something like that, and then the next sentence also ends with a T-I-O-N kind of thing. It's a different word, but and it just it creates this awkward.
Yeah.
It's very
sing-songy.
Yeah. So and that happens more than you would think it would.
Yeah.
So
you know, something else, and this is going to be nominally basic, but there are definitely certain freelancers. Especially freelancers who are, you know, have been doing this for a while and think they've really cemented their place, get into the habit of just wrapping up something and then being like, spell check, grammar check, paycheck. That's it. That's all I have to do. Really, it's so important to, as soon as you finish with something, first of all, we do expect it to be spell checked and we do expect it to be grammar checked. Really, if somebody's sending any editor something that just has misspelled words, it's just like, what is this, 1962? I mean, the technology exists. There's just no reason for that. And frankly, almost shows disregard. But if you can just let something sit for a day and then just go back through and just give it a courtesy edit, it's going to make it so much stronger. And it's not a matter of making our jobs easier. Actually, that's wrong. It is a job matter. Because if you make our jobs easier, then we're like, oh, they made our job totally easy. We should use them more because good Lord, we need the help. So just that sort of thing. Just be mindful of what you've worked on and that there is more to your writing than putting that last period in and sending it in. Going through and making sure that what you're sending is actually the highest quality you can make it is a significant part of being a writer and freelancing. So we're about halfway through here. Do you guys have any editing battlefield / horror stories / anything like that just from behind the scenes that you can think of? You already told the awesome I'm a vagina story and the Easter eggs are kind of the worst. I'm trying to think of anything.
Just another, while you're thinking, another like lower level edit that happens all the time is dangling modifiers.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you're saying, let's see.
Captain of the Guard, since his 16th birthday, John's daughter was just about to be married when the person you're talking about in the initial phrase is not actually the subject of the sentence. You just kind of did a little switch there, and all of a sudden you're saying that the daughter has been the captain of the guard since his 16th birthday, which is, you know, maybe could be what you meant.
She's very happy right now.
It's unlikely, so.
Or like walking into the room, you know, the darkness obscured his vision or whatever. And it's like that says that the darkness was walking into the room, you know, and it's just happens over and over and over and over again. So
specific to just some of the products that we've done and the editing that we've done over the years, more specific to game design stuff in particular, is a lot of times folks will end up coming up with a name, and just a made-up name. They think that sounds awesome, and they've used it in their home games as like maybe a nation or maybe as a bad guy. And then they do writing for us, and they're like, I'll use that awesome name, and they'll put that awesome name out there. And then maybe they'll continue to do writing for us. And they'll, you know, in this interim between, forgot they used that name, and be like, oh, that name was awesome, let me put it in there. And then we end up with, like, multiple things with the same name. Take, for example, in Rise of the Rune Lord, the Lich Kazavan, and the River Kazaron. And the big bad end guy, Kazavan. I mean, we have done this ourselves. Just try to be mindful of it. Something that we also run into all the time is sometimes you create new words in this industry. So your spell checker is probably going to underline the word Pugwumpy when you use it. You've got the option to hit the, like, you know, add to document. But every now and then, certain words are fantasy words, and, you know, your typical spell checking means just aren't going to catch them. That also means that every time they appear, they need to be spell checked by sight. Just because it's not a real word, and if the spell checker does not know the not a real word versus the misspelled not a real word, it does not make those distinctions. So we so often end up with like names that we just kind of skim over because, oh, fantasy name, bad guy name, whatever have you, not a real thing, you just skim by, and then you find out, oh, we have 6 different spellings of this bad guy's 14 consonant name by the end of it. I mean, when it's impronounceable and appears 6, 7, 8 different times. And I mean, what we end up doing a lot is writing a list of just, this is this guy's name, this is how we spelled it the first time, and then checking every time as we go through a document.
And the wiki is a godsend for that, too. Just, I mean, you know. We have, you know, we really have copies of everything we have, but sometimes if something was published 4 or 5 years ago, I mean, I would hear that on the sure, you know, some really obscure name of like a river came from. So like that's such a great tool that we have. Which if you're writing for us, by all means use that as a reference.
Any award winning pathfinder would be.
I came to RPG editing from textbook editing where the layouts were really very standardized, especially in math. You know, if art is not so crazy, you might have like a half page of kids playing or something, but you know, nothing that you have to bend words around. And all of a sudden then, you know, for Pathfinder we have crazy art with like some guy with 13 spears sticking out in all directions. And what we have to make the page for around that. So it just opens, and all of a sudden, I'm like, is there words missing from the sentence? Oh, it's under his elbow. Okay. It's just a whole extra set of things that you have to kind of keep looking for.
Words get bumped. The way the layout works, the art has a little invisible box around it that the word is supposed to wrap around, and sometimes that box is stretched in a strange direction, and then the words go in weird places. And so we work heavily with the, as we were talking about, with the developers as editors, but we also work very, very, all the time with both our layout and the art department just to, with issues like that.
Well, I mean, even beyond this, I mean, a lot of folks, probably most of you guys in fact as well, think about editing as it deals entirely with words. That's not the case. We have to edit our art constantly. Jade Regent was one of the most difficult adventure paths that we had to edit because one of the main characters in that who comes up again and again is Amiko Kaijitsu. Her tattoo is on her left shoulder. So when the artist gives us a piece of artwork with it on her right shoulder, something needs to be corrected here. I mean, that's the sort of thing, that sort of, it's not just about editing words, it's about maintaining continuity, because if we don't catch it, we are guaranteed that on day one of its release, somebody on the message board will be like, hey, does she have tattoos on both shoulders, or did she magically switch it? What's the story I'm not getting about how she magically switched her tattoo? It's like, no, no. Yeah, the super down should probably just be like a hotkey going to the message boards, but so that's also the sort of thing. We also deal with charts and headers and maps and so, oh my god, maps, editing maps is a whole other, just like, does this room have a door to it? Does the...
Why is there a cyclops, like a 10-foot cyclops in this room where the hallway is like 5 feet wide?
Well, I mean, when it's even something like, this is a room that is 15 feet by 15 feet. It has 16 black dragons in it. It's like...
Wow, are those tiny little...
Yeah,
one of the most dangerous traps is the compass directions. Yeah, getting the direction of a corridor or what have you. Because when we initially get it as editors, we get the like an event, a Pathfinder adventure, we get it in a Word document. So we don't have a map even to look at, usually. And so we have to, in our editorial process calls for doing two editorial passes in Word, ideally, and then two in after layout. So when we get to the layout, we have to be extra careful to look for all that stuff. Also, in a similar vein, monsters are big traps, because when we have a bestiary in a Pathfinder Adventure Path volume, the art was ordered when? How long ahead of time?
Yeah, like usually like 2-3 months.
Yeah, and then we get the words, and they're, you know, invariably the descriptions of these monsters, there are discrepancies in them. And as editors, you know, the developer looks at it first, but might not, you know, catch everything. And so we have to be very, very careful to look at these pictures of these monsters and make sure everything matches. We have to do a lot of rewriting.
And it goes right down to like the rules, because like,
exactly.
if you know, you're writing a monster that's got five arms and it's got bear claws on each arm, but for some reason his slam attack or his claw attack does bludgeoning damage, it's like, well, that doesn't make sense because it's got claws. It gets tricky, and it's like, why does this thing that's got eyeballs all around it not have all around vision? You know, you have to think about everything that the author didn't have when they were writing it, because they don't have the picture, they don't have the map, and you know, so they don't have the full story, and we have to look at everything and make sure it all connects, doesn't make sense on its own.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting point. I mean, it's really, a lot of times, it's not until it gets to the editors that all of the pieces are in place. So the author has written it's his part, the developer has done his work, the artist has done her work, and then once it gets to the editors, they're really the front that's like, does this make sense as a whole? Do all of these pieces work together? And if they don't, which they typically don't, making them work together to be something that we think is worth going out to our readers. So we've got some time left here, so let's open it up for some questions. What you guys want to know?
I'd actually like to know what you do use to do your page layout to get all the text around the 13 spear and pale monster.
We use InDesign and InCopy. Both of them are Adobe products.
InDesign and what?
InCopy.
Earlier you said you talked about feedback with your freelancers. How much of your time is actually invested in it? Does it vary from the work produced by the freelancer?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on how much time we have left at the end of the day. You know, a lot of time I just go from one project to the next, and there's not a lot of time to get feedback. And you know, honestly, by the time I've done the turnovers and times, so done with it, I'm just like, okay, shut up, get out of here. But We do take a serious effort to communicate with freelancers, and we do take a serious effort to help them improve, because that makes our lives easier. So typically, at the end of the assignment, I'll go through the list of authors for the product, and I'll look at their turnover, and then I'll look at the finished one, and I'll be like, okay, what did I have to change to make this near developed, to make it developed. And I send them, I say, okay, you need to use less passive voice, you need to stop giving your characters after your famous, after famous anime actors. You need to do the A, B, C. And it usually just takes the form of an email with a bullet point list, which it's also a balancing act, because a lot of freelancers, we all have feelings, and nobody likes to be told that their turnover wasn't up to snuff. But so it's a matter of knowing how much to say and phrasing it positively.
Yes. Well, that's kind of an interesting point. If a professional editor has taken the time to give you feedback, they think you're worth it. If somebody just hands me something and it's just like total crap, I'm not gonna have another word to say to them. I will be, thank you for your contribution, your paycheck will be in the mail, I will now be spending my weekend rewriting this. Good day, sir. Probably not that last part, but.
Probably not that your paycheck is in the mail.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing. It's work for hire, so if they've contracted it, and it's not up to snuff, they've still done the work for us. So if I need to rewrite something, I still need to rewrite something, and we still need to pay them for it, because they have a signed contract with us. So, and that's the sort of thing that, makes me really excited while I spend my weekend writing it, knowing that we have to pay somebody to do something that I'm having to redo.
It's going to have their name on it.
And it's going to have their name on it. But if somebody is giving you feedback, they're not trying to tear you down. They're not trying to be like, you're a bad writer for this reason, this reason, this reason, this reason. And we try to couch our comments in, we think you are an awesome person. Here are things you should write on, boom, 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 or you should work on, boom, 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 boom. And the hope is that the next time that they do writing for us, because we rarely give feedback to somebody that we are not going to, that we don't have the intention of working with ever. The intention is that next time they won't have to worry about that. They will be a better writer. It will be easier for us to work with them. And they're going to be somebody that we can work with more. So if you ever get feedback from an editor or another writer, don't...
It's a compliment. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a compliment. Do not take it as anything that... Don't take it as... an insult or a punishment or a reason not to do any writing or a reason to think you're not good. You're worth it if you're getting any sort of feedback.
It's an investment in the writing.
Exactly. Yeah. What else we got?
Question about the repeating names you mentioned earlier. I remember in college how many Brian's or Ben's or John's or Patrick's.
Sure.
I mean, yes, you want to make sure people's names are there, but how do you deal with common names?
It's interesting because... The verisimilitude that you find in a fantasy world is actually probably harder to convince something that you would just accept as commonplace. If you saw it in the real world, you might see it in a fantasy setting and just be like, well, that's completely unrealistic. I mean, we've gotten pieces of art in it and be like, people do not look like this. And then I've gone to the grocery store and been like, people should not look like that. it's kind of the same with names. If Karzoo was like just a common name in our campaign setting, it's like, we've got a big bad end guy named Karzoo, and a mayor named Karzoo, and a prostitute over here named Karzoo, and here's a goblin named Karzoo. With the number of people, the number of combinations of sounds in the language, it would be completely realistic for those names to come up again and again. But because our readership would be like, hey, that's over here, I don't buy it, we try to avoid that.
Yeah, in fiction writing, like,
One of the things that authors do is to make sure that their characters not only have all different names, but begin with different letters. Mm-hmm. Because you're trying to solidify these names. So fiction doesn't necessarily always echo, it's always, not always good to echo reality. There are sometimes, there are different conventions that need to be used, and that's one of them, really. Because you want to solidify those names in the reader so that, that they remember them and they don't confuse two characters together.
Yeah.
So.
Does Faisal ever
imagine
freelance editing, or do you go yourself
in-house? We currently do all of our editing in-house. And let me explain the reason for that a little bit, because this is a question that we end up getting a lot. We have how many product lines? Pathfinder Adventure Path, Pathfinder Campaign Setting, Pathfinder Player Companion, Pathfinder Modules, the Game Mastery line, Hardcover Rulebook line, Pathfinder Tales,
scenarios
for Pathfinder Society, blogs that go up every day, marketing, web fiction, Pawn Collections, Pathfinder Miniatures, Face Cards, Item Cards, map packs,
this goes on,
etc. We are a company of fewer than 50 people. About half of that are on the RPG production side, on the editorial side. Editor wise, we have. I'm not even going to include myself because I don't do much in the way of editing these days. You guys and Sutter and Logan, four people who have all of that to read four times before it's fit for public consumption.
And Logan's new.
And Logan's new.
And
that means editing it, turning it around, dealing with the developers, dealing with freelancers, dealing with the art staff, going to the art staff and being like, this text box is too long, or not long enough, or covers up the art, or the text wrap is bad, or oh my god, something's on fire, or whatever. We work at a pace that is very similar to magazine or newspaper with the amount that we do. It's very deadline, 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 go, 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 boom, boom, boom. Any slowdown that we would run into with telecommuting or working with somebody remotely is simply time that we can't afford to spend. So as the technology becomes more readily, matures, that might become more of an option, but currently it just doesn't work for our setup.
We work in, like the editors, Judy and myself, James Sutter and Patrick, work within what we call the editorial pit. And we're always bouncing questions back and forth, and just for continuity's sake or what have you. And that would just be impossible to do. Tough meeting, yeah.
It's tough enough when, like, Jacobs has been in a meeting for 3 hours, and I can't turn over the adventure path to the next person until I get to talk to him for 5 minutes.
Just while I'm thinking about it, since we mentioned this kind of weirdly famous editorial pit, we have a whiteboard in our editorial pit. And just to show you guys, that's something that we deal with more than just words and have to deal with, like, weird ideas sometimes, too, and editing just ideas themselves. On that whiteboard is a flowchart. And that flowchart says, did the aboleth do it? And it says yes, no. And for no, it says okay. And for yes, it goes down to one that says no, they didn't. And it just points it back up. This flowchart and this board is actually noted on the Wikipedia page for aboleth now. So if you check out aboleth on Wikipedia, it brings up a message board post that we did and a picture of this whiteboard. So we're the aboleth have done it so much that they don't get to do it anymore. They're cut off.
That was our course. port flow chart for the Skull and Shackles and Interpath so we could remember port and starboard.
That's the other weird thing about our jobs is we have to become experts in everything. Because we don't know anything about ships, but somebody out there surely does, and we're going to know about it if we screwed it up. So, if we're publishing a pirate adventure path, we get to know all about ships all of a sudden.
Luckily, we do have some people with very unique backgrounds. Like, Judy has a background in linguistics. I have a background in anthropology. Rob has a good background in history, and on and on.
Okay, what's the tallest building we could have in, without magic in Galarian? Yeah. Like a useful building. Yeah, four stories with that kind of technology.
Because he was an architect. So,
you could do it. It's expensive. So you wouldn't have, like, you know, a hotel or something that was
taking
him, but you don't have to. That is true. And
so. We still got time for one or two more.
How much time do you have to spend on the Almighty Staff blog?
We have a giant staff block maker, which we provided for freelancers. One of it is Excel. It is an ungodly monstrosity, and that has all sorts of interesting whatever. you don't find out that, cell B67 isn't looking properly to cell C67 until you go through the staff log. Why does this guy have a plus 47 bonuses, 40 days? And, why does he have only 3 HP? And, we do spend a lot of time in the staff log maker. We do spend a lot of time in the staff log. So that's one of the main jobs of the developer because, part of the job is knowing the rules, to the T. And if you're not clear on the rule, you got to better be damn clear on it by the end of the day. So we spend a lot of time on staff logs. That said, it's just a huge wall of numbers. It's really easy to miss the numbers.
So typically what will happen is once a freelancer is provided with this helpful Excel document to help them make sure that something comes in our style and has the right math, so on and so forth. They are then expected to go through and double check all of that because it is a tool, not a crutch. It then goes over to the developers who get the Excel file that they use to make that stat block and the stat block itself. They have the opportunity to check to make sure that the stat block is actually, the generator is actually working, but then their job is to go through it and make sure that all of that's legit. Possibly rebuilding it or making sure that it fits with the rest of the adventure. After that, as the editors are going through it, it is still part of their responsibility to be editing those. It is not part of their responsibility to be like checking every number and whatnot. But if it says perception plus 5 up here, it had better say perception plus 5 down there, that sort of thing. And to make sure that all the pieces are there. I mean, one of the hardest things to catch are errors of omission, where it's just something's missing. Not here, so...
Yeah, what's this guy's speed?
So we do spend a good deal of time and a good number of passes just to make sure that the rules are right.
That's what lines are monthly now. We just wrap up the MPC codecs. All set ones.
Yeah. Maybe one more quick one?
It's not specifically a question, but just an experience. You mentioned the, 15 males to prostitutes one day. And it was a couple months ago, there was a documentary filmmaker did a Kickstarter on women and representation of video game films and got tons of hate mail and I was wondering, just over here, have you seen it in, has it gotten better on submissions over time? Or how would you, has things progressed in the last couple of years as far as like the amount of that you run into? Is it less than more, same?
So, I mean, in terms of the hostility, that is not, I mean, that's...
Well, not just the hostility, but just how often it's like, are authors more mindful now than they were maybe 5 years ago, that kind of...
Definitely, word. And definitely, like, once we tell them that they're doomed. But this is what we're looking for, you know. Oh, I mean, sometimes if no one's ever told you that before, like male authors, female authors, everybody, we've had to tell this. Or, you know, with artists too, you know, actually when we said we wanted our, you know, heavy hitting paladin to be a woman, we meant that, like, we're, you need to fix this.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is also just kind of the tradition that the game is born out of. I mean, not a lot of women in the Fellowship of the Rings. Just, that's really where a lot of our fantasy is born from. So a lot of the time, when our authors who are getting, like, they're great to finally tell their Lord of the Rings story, they think about, you know, the elf archer dude, and the little sneaky dude, and the other dude. Well, it turns out that's not the fantasy that we have around us even more. I mean, this entire industry, this entire genre, has really evolved over the last century, and continues to. And a lot of our authors are not being exclusive to be insulting, or to purposely exclude people. It's just not something that they're thinking about. They're thinking about, I need to make a dungeon with monsters. But it turns out that there is more to that. And we don't want to make this an exclusive game. We don't want to make this the old boys club of role-playing. We want women to be playing. We want homosexuals to be playing. We want every ethnicity to be playing. It's an awesome game. Everybody deserves to enjoy this game. If we can go to our freelancers and tell them, like, hey, just think about this. Just factor it in there. Just having something be in the back of your head, and to the point that they just do it naturally, those are the games we want to be publishing. Yeah. And those are the freelancers we want to be working with.
Always trying to do a little bit better
all
the time.
Yeah. Again, not special treatment. We don't want to give anyone special treatment. We just want to give them truth. I think that's what we've got, and I think that's what we've got time for. So if anybody has any questions or needs anything, just give us a call. Thanks for being here.